What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back. Mike Shope and the Bulldog, Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Sal, what are you up to today?
I have had so many different radio spots over the last 24 hours, really all week, with stations around the country, local, national. It's crazy, and I'm not complaining. In a way, I might be bragging, actually, to be quite honest with you, but I'm just letting you know. Like, that's what I've been doing. I talked with the guys in Rochester at 320, and then Wichita, ESPN Wichita at 345. On here with you. I did something in the Missouri Sports Network today. I did Sirius XM this morning. Crazy.
I also have my most ever. It's two. It's not as many as yours, but today I have Kansas City and Baltimore. So yep. Two for me in a day is definitely, it's probably at least ties the record. Mm. Yeah, they apparently the Bills are good. It's really not about us so much. At least I would say that.
Look at yours, guys.
Your old boss's station reached out to me. He hired me. Andy Roth hired me, then went to Cleveland before I got to Buffalo, but they reached out. I'll be on in Cleveland tonight, too.
Wow.
Well, tell everybody we say hi.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah. You'd think these were sports books, the way they're calling all of us.
I know, right? Yeah, you're right about that, man.
All right, Sal. So one day closer. Joe Ostrowski from BetQL on with us a short time ago. What do you like for player props? Singletary. He was quick with his answer. Singletary. So we're looking at like 59.5 yards, decent odds among the favorites to score a touchdown. How important – It's interesting, right, to ask this, like, how important is the running back to their chances?
I think it has to be really important in this game. When they played a year ago, the Bills really had no running threat to speak of other than Josh Allen, and that allowed that Chiefs defense to kind of pin their ears back, and Chris Jones really kind of took over the game. You can't let that happen, and the way to not let that happen is they have to respect the fact that you can turn around and hand the ball off, or in Josh Allen's case, maybe hand it off in front of him, you know, if you're running an RPO or something like that. And you look at the numbers, guys, the Chiefs just have not stopped the run very well this year. You go back a couple weeks ago, Melvin Gordon ran all over them, and then Drew Lock did as well in the same game, right? I mean, I think it's vitally important. And this is not, I'm not saying old school football and, you know, hand the ball off 40 times at all. But absolutely, I think, I heard what Joe said, I agree with him. Now, I think it might depend on volume, but I expect the Bills to be able to run the ball efficiently in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Sal, it's never been to me, for me personally, like a problem if the Bills wanted to get better at running the ball. I think we just wanted to make sure, I wanted to make sure for myself, that they weren't going to become a team that relied on it because the passing game is so good. But, man, to me, it's always been like almost undeniably true that if you get better at running the ball, this team might be really, really hard to handle.
Agreed, 100%. And, you know, if you can do that with Devin Singletary, it opens up Josh Allen. It opens up Isaiah McKenzie to be able to do some things. And then, of course, it opens up the passing game as well. So coaches always talk about balance. I think sometimes it's interpreted too much as 50-50 run pass or something like that. I think what most coaches want truly is the ability to do multiple things so well that the defense never truly knows what's coming and can't just focus on one thing. You never want to be one-dimensional. The goal as a defense is to make an offense one-dimensional. That's always the goal. And I think when they say balance, that's what we're talking about here is, yep, if you can run the ball really well, then even having the threat, as Sean McDermott said a couple weeks ago, and you guys have pointed that out, I know that, that's really what it comes down to, and it makes everything go that much smoother for you.
Well, on offense, Cole Beasley's numbers have come down. I mean, we wondered about what role Isaiah McKenzie would have last week. He was excellent in the game in Foxborough. And has he moved past Beasley, or is that not even the way to look at it? You know, each game being different, it's the playoffs now. I would expect Beasley to be on the field and active for this game, but flat out, like, is he behind McKenzie if that matters?
I don't know if it matters anymore. I think they both bring so much to the table that you can use. I still think, you know, Cole Beasley has a really important role for this team, especially if teams just want to zone you up. You know, Cole can just find those spots. And by the way, the Chiefs' starting nickel corner, Rashad Fenton, did not practice again today. So that could be a real interesting spot this weekend, that particular spot, that slot receiver, nickel corner, without him playing. If they're dipping into a secondary that's already really not all that great necessarily, I think Cole Beasley could become a major factor here where, hey, if he can just get to the sticks and turn around, like that becomes a problem for Kansas City. And, you know, Isaiah McKenzie with all the different things he does. And I think Isaiah is really an X factor of, hey, if he's on the field, they can't really know exactly what's coming. He can go lateral and run. You could put him in the backfield. He can go vertical and run, you know, how you want to play him. But I don't think you should discount Cole Beasley here. And I would not be surprised if after this game we are talking about, boy, Cole Beasley had a really nice day. He caught 8 passes for, you know, 70-something yards and a touchdown. I would not be shocked by that at all.
How do you anticipate the Chiefs playing the Bills in the secondary, Sal? Like, have they been a team that I know last year in this matchup, in the AFC title game, their physicality was a big deal, and the lack of calls was a big deal. You know, because they sort of manhandled the Bills receivers to an extent, and the officiating crew had a reputation for sort of looking the other way on that, and that's what happened, and it was tough. Not to say that that's why the Bills got blown out in the game, mm-hmm. but it was a factor. What do we think? I mean, I feel like when we talk about the Chiefs defense, when I talk about the Chiefs defense, all I do is talk about Chris Jones being there when he wasn't there in October when these two teams played. And, obviously, how they plan to cover Diggs, what they plan to do, zone, man, two high safeties, all that. Like, do we have a good feel for that at this point?
Well, they've played, according to people I've talked to in Kansas City on the radio this week, they've been playing a little bit more man-to-man this year as the season's gone on and gotten a little bit more physical and doing those things. So I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of go back to that game plan. But you know, the double-edged sword here is you do that, you're opening up Josh Allen's ability to run as well. You know, if guys are going to turn around and have their back to him and he's going to take off. So I wouldn't be surprised if they test that though, Bulldog. I think going into the game, I wouldn't be surprised if early on they try that physicality. You do have John Hussey and not all of his crew, 5 of the 8 officiating this game are from his crew. It is a mixed crew, but John Hussey's crew is doing this game, and they actually do have a reputation for not calling that as much. So that could be an indication that they're going to try and be a little more physical. They're going to try and be a little more grabby. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, but I think for the Bills, they got to get them out of that. If that's the case, then here comes Josh Allen at you. Let's see. Now you need to back up and play a little more soft and play some zone. My prediction is they probably open up the game and try a little bit of that.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Bills and Chiefs in the divisional round Sunday night at 6:30 on WGR. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Just also on the Beasley McKenzie topic, they were on the field for about as often as each other last week. 19 snaps to 17 for McKenzie. I mean, the Bills had such an efficient game. The snap totals kind of sound low in a lot of places. Excuse me, but McKenzie 6 touches and Beasley 1. Is sort of the reason for pointing that out. So, you know, like maybe I asked you this yesterday. Apologies if I did. It's mm-hmm. It's this game. I mean, we're talking about it constantly. That's my excuse. Just like the Bills winning there in October has a lot of value to me looking at this game because just, you know, maybe it can be wrong to do this, but without that, you don't have, can they win there? You know, they look like they should match up well, but can they execute and beat them? I mean, that was a big enough game. That was an important game to the Bills. And they were just great that night. So I think it takes a lot of the anxiety away to remember that and to think that it wasn't that long ago that they went there and won decisively. Maybe the Chiefs are better now. They've certainly played better post that game. But still, like I think it takes some of the anxiety off of thinking about how this is going to go.
I agree with you a lot, Mike. I think that, you know, athletes often talk about envisioning themselves doing something, you know, and They don't have to. They can think right to the live event that happened. They didn't have to envision it. They did it. They went there last year or this year, and they won that game. And we all know what was written about after that game, how the Bills really geared up. They had a specific game plan that they kind of unleashed in that particular game. They put a lot of thought into that. But now they know. They can go there and they can win. They've played good football on the road. They've scored points on the road. They've gone to places like Kansas City, Tennessee the following week. Yes, they lost the game. They scored over 30 points in that game. They go to New Orleans on Thanksgiving night. They've been in these hostile environments on the road where it's noisy. They've scored points. They've done that. They've gone to Kansas City. They've won. I think it's super interesting that I heard, like, Ryan Bates, I heard a clip of him this week talking. I think it was on One Bills Live, where he said something like, yeah, we're going to go there and punch him in the mouth. And I'm like, wow, like, I never hear the Bills talk like this. It's almost like bulletin board material, right? And then I heard Deion Dawkins on our Zoom call a little bit earlier, and he's talking about that someone, as soon as Melvin Ingram's name was mentioned, Deion literally interrupted the question and said, that was week one, and I look forward to seeing him. I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, I don't ever hear this team talk like that. Right. And you know what else? If you guys remember, week five they went there, and I said to you guys on the radio something that really stood out to me when I joined you the next day or on following that. The Bills just, they were super physical that night, and they hit everything that moved. And I think they think that's the path to victory again, judging by that and what I'm hearing from these guys, which is we're going to be physical with them, and they're not going to be able to handle us.
Yeah, I think Dawkins, I mean, it was a very tough day, but week one, I wonder if he meant by that, like, I was not who I really am in week one, right? That's what we're to take from that, yeah. Entirely reasonable to say, you know, I mean, I know there's bulletin board and, you know, toughness and sending messages and all that, but for real, I think legitimately Dawkins was compromised early in the season. Almost no question about it.
Yeah, he is playing now like a Pro Bowl left tackle. He is anchoring an offensive line that has not allowed a sack at its quarterback in 4 weeks. There's viral videos of him pushing Matthew Judon to the ground and then going and destroying J.C. Jackson on the back end of the same play. You know, he's playing really good football right now. I think he's playing the best football of his season. Maybe not of his career. I don't know. It's tough to judge. But he's certainly in good form right now. I think the way the offensive line is set up, the communication piece – you know, Ryan Bates, people talk about Ryan Bates and how he was this key component, and he is. And one thing to remember, a big reason for that is this is a guy who knows all five positions. He knows exactly what everyone is supposed to do because he has played all five positions. The communication piece by having Ryan Bates in there to know what the guy on the right is doing, the guy on the left is doing, and everybody working in sync is very, very valuable.
With Sal Capaccio, so on the other side of things, I mean, in this Kansas City interview today, which, by the way, I did make the bet. You know, what am I going to say to those guys, right?
Like they say they want to make a bet. What are you going to – turtle? Yes. Like, oh, I think that's lame. Yeah, I mean, I feel you. I mean, it's easy for me to poke fun. I'm not the one being called by Kansas City.
So they – it will be barbecue, by the way. I just like, – fine. It's good. Barbecue is good.
Yeah.
So they're like, what are the Bills going to do about Kelce and Hill? Like last year's game, of course. And I don't know how to answer that. Do the Bills know how to answer that? I don't know how to answer that. I said, tell me how I did, Sal. Like, Poyer and Hyde are excellent. They played that night. They are excellent. Milano, these are guys you'd want in this situation. I mentioned Taron Johnson. Like, even without Trey White, the Bills have a very good secondary. Jackson, too. Like, they're nice there. So, you know, they put up huge games. I mean, that game Kelce had last year was just massive. So that could happen again, but I don't know. What can or should the Bills do specifically if you think you know about him or them?
So, as we all know, traditionally for many years, the Bills just had a lot of hard time handling really good tight ends, right? Whoever that was, it just was always a talking point. They haven't handled tight ends. And even last year, go back, they didn't do a great job. And then that game, Travis Kelce ate them up. And I think in that game, they ran a lot of zone defense. Chiefs just basically had Travis Kelce go and turn around and catch a ball, and then he's tough to tackle. You know, I think Matt Milano took a lot of flack for that game because he was in that spot sometimes, but I don't think it necessarily was on him. I think it was just the way that they were kind of running their zone defense. So this year's been different, and I think this year what you've seen a little bit more is the safeties, especially Jordan Poyer. The Bills have kind of gone away from using their linebackers on those guys, and they can now flow a little bit more, go against the run, and using their safeties, and Jordan Poyer specifically a little bit more on tight ends. You remember, I think you guys brought it up a little bit maybe earlier this week, toward it was either you or Howard or Jeremy. Towards the end of that game, there was a time where it looked like I don't know if Jordan Poyer actually hit Kelce, but he was about to light him up. Like, he was right there with him.
Oh, he hit him.
He did hit him. Okay, thank you. Yeah. He did hit him. That's right. And thankfully, you know, Kelce was okay. Nothing happened from it. But there was a bit of a talking point about that. You know, I think that's one way. But it's not that he's one-on-one. I think what the Bills are doing and what they've done this year successfully, if you look at, like, some of the fantasy numbers, the Bills are one of the top teams in the league at defending tight ends this year. They just have not had really big days. Look at Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. I know they weren't really involved in the Patriots offense a lot anyway, but the Bills just shut them down. They did nothing against the Bills in the games that they played. I think what they're doing is, and I wouldn't be surprised if this happens again, it's tricky against the Chiefs because they're different and they have so much speed. It's not a one-on-one thing. It's though, if once you see that tight end coming out, I think the Bills are just adding an extra guy there. And I think it's Jordan Poyer oftentimes who he comes up and he says, look, if he's going to catch it, you're going to have an extra guy here for me to tackle, or you can try to fit the ball in because I'm going to be in that spot when it gets there. That leaves Micah Hyde alone on the back end. But as we saw on Saturday night, there ain't nothing wrong with Micah Hyde being alone on the back end, right? So if you want to do that, I think the danger there is that happens. Somebody gets loose over the top because they have the speed, because there's one less guy. But I think that's how they've defended it, and I think that's probably what you'll see this week.
Go ahead. Can I stay on tight end for a minute?
Yeah.
Did you have a takeaway from how they did versus Gronkowski? 5 for 62. And I ask that because, like, in fantasy, I do hear that sort of that category come up a lot, a team versus tight ends.
Yeah.
And I always have the same thought, which is, who did they play? And the Bills didn't really play. They played Kelce, but if you go down from there, like Waller and Andrews and Kittle, and, you know, they played Pitts and he had a big one, then he got hurt. Doesn't play tight end really anyway, like Gesicki. So your point is strong. It's just they didn't play a lot of the better ones. Gronkowski, however, you know, 5 for 62. Do you remember how you saw that?
I don't remember, other than the fact that in the second half they were just so much better at everything that they did. I don't remember exactly. I'm looking right now. So here it is. In the second half, I just pulled it up. In the second half of that game, 3 targets for Gronkowski, 0 catches. I think they made an adjustment on there. I don't remember exactly what they did. If you remember, Godwin kind of ate them up in the first half, too. The Bills were just so much better. Might have been just getting more pressure, to be honest with you. Maybe that's what the key is here. You get a little bit more pressure. You have to force Mahomes to do something instead of saying, I'm going to wait for that guy to get open. But it's a good point, Mike. Of course, it's always about who you play. I think that's also baked into, you know, the Bills having such a great defense. I don't want to take anything away from them. They are a really, really great defense. But they also did face some quarterbacks that weren't on the level this year, you know?
Yeah,
and that obviously helps you in those particular numbers.
Sacks is another one like this.
Right.
Yep.
Pass rush, of course, Sal. Pressure on the quarterback, pressure on Mahomes specifically last year ends. In comes Rousseau. In comes Boogie Basham. In comes Efe Obada. I don't know if there's more to the list here, but those are maybe the three big ones. And especially Rousseau and Obada, long arms, tall, big, like just long guys. And you saw, we talked about it in the run-up to the game in October between the Chiefs and Bills. I know I made a point of bringing it up that a part of that isn't necessarily get to him, but take away his lanes and disrupt him. And Rousseau got a pick doing that in the meeting in October. So I want to stop short of just assuming they'll have the same thing in mind, but it seems like a pretty good place to start.
I agree with you. And I'll even go so far as to say, I don't know if it's necessarily, if you're coaching the Bills' defensive ends this week, you may coach them to not necessarily just go. It might be get there, be in front of him, use your wingspan, because he likes to throw from different angles and things like that. Like, if you give him a lane, he's going to have a lane to throw to, or he could take off. And by the way, he's done that a few times on some third down situations. It may be this is really more about contain. If we're not, you know, of course you want to put pressure on him. You don't want to give him all day. But if you make him be a little bit more accurate on the shorter passes, instead of giving him an ability to go off script and get out and then throw the ball and find somebody, which he did a couple of times, I think that might be it. Yeah, I mean, Bulldog, how many times did we sit here in January, February, and March and talk about how this team is building a team to combat the Kansas City Chiefs? And that's exactly those names you brought up. This is it. They built this team to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. That's why those guys are here. So this is it. You did this, and now you have that chance, and now you got to prove that all the moves you made to do this were the right ones.
There's every reason to like them. the first meeting, the experience of last year, I suppose you could say, the injury report, the form they're in. Like, there's just every reason to like them. There are reasons to like Kansas City. I don't know if there are as many or if there's like such a clean list, but there's every reason to like them. I did feel very good about them last year going there, and it did not work out. But hey, to that last point too, the Chiefs running the ball is also like sort of what is the pivot. It's just funny. You have two great quarterbacks, two teams where you'd want to always put them, you sort of tempt them to run the ball, I think. But yeah, that could end up being the optimal strategy for each team with teams, you know, that's how it goes in football, with teams trying to, you know, take them out of their strengths. So,
well, we'll see what the Chiefs do in their run game. Darrell Williams didn't practice again with his toe injury. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was at practice today. He did practice, I believe, in full. We'll get the exact designation. He did practice. I do wonder, though, how effective he could be. I mean, with that shoulder injury, he's missed a lot of games. He's just coming back now. We'll see. But I think McKinnon's the guy here who you think, okay, yep, he was kind of the X factor. But the good thing for the Bills, they saw him last week. They saw how they could use him. There's film on this now. If he's going to be the guy, like, how do they employ him? I think that was a benefit for the Bills to see that against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The other thing they do a lot, and I think they're going to try to do, is screen passes. They'll probably throw screens. You know, Patrick Mahomes, I was going through these numbers with Joe a little bit earlier today. Patrick Mahomes, actually, his average, like, depth of target, meaning from the line of scrimmage to where the ball is targeted and thrown to, he's like bottom third in the NFL, but he's number two in the NFL in yards after catch from his receivers because they get the ball in their hands and they let him go. And a lot of that screen passes right off the line to Tyreek Hill, that kind of thing. The Bills have to tackle well this week.
Sal, got to go. Thanks for your time. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
That is Sal Capaccio on our Wester Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
You know, it's tight today, and there's a hockey game too, but if you want to call in and talk about this game with us, now's good. We have John Clayton and Kurt Warner next hour, and then Paul will be along for pregame at 6. 803-0550 to do that. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. The update next on WGR.
Like, I carried it over to the season, and throughout this season, you know, we've had our ebbs and flows as far as, like, the roller coaster. You know, we've had our share of bad with our good. You know, I feel like this team was built off a lot of character. Throughout this season, we had a lot of triumphs, a lot of close calls, falling short a couple of times, and it built a lot of them. So that's more driven me up to this point rather than the photograph. Just going back to that place, I would say, you know, we played them earlier in the year. I would have had that feeling earlier in the year more than anything. But being in a position that we are now, we're grateful for the opportunity to be in the show, to be in the playoffs. Where we are, you know, we work to get here. So we're just trying to execute, you know, go in with the right mindset and, you know, make our plays. Everybody needs to do their job.
Stephon Diggs, reference to that picture, those images of Diggs, the end of the game or after the game last year in Kansas City, hanging around on the field for the Chiefs celebration. Some really powerful images. Diggs, 2 for 69 in the first meeting. Remember the play where he makes a catch deep, and it kind of looks like he thinks he's in the clear and gets tackled. That was from Kansas City. I mean, 2 for 69, it's his low on the season for catches. But Bills were well ahead for much of that game and didn't really need him to be, you know, a target hog, as Bulldog would say.
Yeah, that's my preferred phrasing. Yes.
Target hog. Yeah. But, I mean, this guy, what, sixth year in the league, is it, Diggs? And he's been to the playoffs. If that might be off by one, but he's been to the playoffs 5 times. 3 times with Minnesota. The famous Minneapolis Miracle play.
Yep.
And then last year was very productive for the Bills in the playoffs against New England. Again, kind of like that Chief game where they really didn't need to lean
on him.
Didn't
really need him. Yeah, right. Right.
You know?
He did get the one long one. Yeah, but
kind of the same thing.
Yep.
In the playoff game last year at Kansas City, Diggs, 6 for 77, and did not score. But he had 100-yard games in the two previous weeks. 803-0550 to call us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Sneaky Joe. Sabres and Stars tonight. Joe, have those teams ever played?
I think once. At least once.
They've met once. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
There was some controversy, I think.
Yeah, something happened.
If I remember correctly. Yeah, something definitely happened. Yeah.
If we're arguing, not arguing, if we're talking about refs on Monday, I'm moving back to football. If we're talking about refs on Monday, what is the point? What is the thing going to be? I bet it's pass interference. If we're upset with the officiating from this game, I would guess that it is because of pass interference.
I mean, that's a pretty safe bet. You know, if we were putting together props on what are Bills fans going to be mad about on Monday regarding officiating, I think pass interference, maybe even called or uncalled, maybe a combination of the two, kind of like we had in the Tampa game, right? It was, you know, you're calling that on us after you let those go on them? What? And I mean, I'm not saying that pejoratively at all. I was at the front of the line. Like, I was as annoyed as I've been in 20 years about officiating after that Tampa game. So, yes, I think pass interference, roughing the passer.
Okay, good.
Could be a big one. I mean, you've got, you know, two of the marquee talents in the sport, and, you know, be careful getting near them.
One of them is at home. Mm-hmm. The other is a big guy.
Right.
Both, which could, you know, if you're sort of worried about this area, both sort of point the wrong way.
Right.
Mahomes, the refs favor home teams, subconsciously at least. They favor home teams. So he gets protected. And Allen, I mean, for all the times he's been compared with Cam Newton, now, this was always a story.
You don't want to be compared to Cam Newton.
Right. Because Newton just would not, he did not get calls like other guys. It's Chara. You know, he's like so big. Well, I'm not sure that's the right point I want to make, but just the guy's so big,
yeah.
It's not like Chara. That's a different point. He right. just, I don't know, roughing.
He looks
different.
Like he can protect himself.
Yes.
Right? The hit doesn't look that harmful because he maybe doesn't react the way a guy who is, you know, 2 inches and 20 pounds lighter might or whatever. Like that's, yeah, that's a thing. Yeah.
The Chara point, why did I think of him? Like the with Chara – so much bigger. I'm thinking like Derek Roy is the other guy in the play where, I don't know, did officials sort of, were they too tough on him because of his size or, never mind. I saw him in a fight the other night.
He annihilated that poor guy from
Philadelphia. He did.
And that guy is, I think, supposed to be a tough guy or something. And Chara, you know, he's 45. I mean, how old is he?
He's got that old man strength at this point.
He's playing in the NHL just taking out goons.
The guy threw a headshot on an Islander, and Chara was just like right there, just grabbed him. oh, you're on the ice? I should have planned this better.
right. This is, yeah, bad job by me. My
Whoops.
Bad.
Didn't realize you would come on. I didn't realize the D changed there. I didn't, yeah. was trying to plan this better. Let's talk to Keith here. Hi, Keith.
Hi, guys. Good evening. First of all, I just want to say it's so great how the tenor of the conversation is evolved over the years. I started listening to you guys right when I moved out to California after college, I think in like 2004. And, you know, it's gotten a lot better to talk about the Bills, so I'm happy for all of us.
Well, thank you for being with us all that time, Keith. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah, it started out, I was working at Nickelodeon. I'd have to stream you, like, off my laptop back in the studio where I was hiding out, and now I can, you know, be it on my phone.
Probably not quite to the Double Dare days, but that's still a long time ago.
No, yeah, it was a lot of getting bossed around by 10-year-olds, but
Bills to pay. Call the Barnes.
So my question was just, you know, looking back at how the Bills won the last game against the Chiefs, you know, I know that.
Pay your medical bills. Recover your.
Keith, what's going on there? What is that?
Sorry about that. Phone USB issues.
Okay.
Sorry. So going back to the last game, the Bills won the turnover margin, I think 4-0, you know, and end up with an 18-point win. Win big last week. How much, you know, when you're winning big, I feel like coaching's not as scrutinized. But obviously we've talked about Sean McDermott aggressive sometimes, not always. How much do you think that's going to play a role in this game, considering, you know, the Bills not great in one score games this year? It stands to reason this one's going to be closer, maybe not, but do you think he'll have second New England game, Sean, or what will we get, and how much will that play a factor?
Well, you're right to bring it up. You know, last week that might have been talked about as much as any other angle, at least in here. Other shows are different. Deion Dawkins listens to shows. He doesn't listen to our show because he's got this, you know, everybody thinks they're terrible thing going, which is like, okay, I mean, there's a purpose for that. Anyway, this was a topic last week, and it did not materialize, as you said. I mean, the game wasn't even close.
And they never even had a fourth down.
Right. I mean, they literally did not even have one decision like that to make. If this game is close, that's going to be worth watching. I don't want to try to predict how he'll do. You know, I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit. Sometimes I think I haven't given him enough. And the team has evolved. You talk about the conversation. The team has evolved. The team has grown in important ways. Strategy stuff, not just the other stuff that gets more of the attention, like, you know, culture and whatever. So I don't want to assume that the Bills are going to punt or kick short field goals Sunday night in an effort to keep the game close, you know, like one of those sort of phrases. I don't want to assume that. But if you're out there going, what's going to happen, you're not sure, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I mean, it was a talking point for sure last week because, you know, we pointed out, like, you've got, you know, this game in Foxborough, you know, the rematch, which the Bills won, and you've got a touchdown scored on fourth down. You've got another touchdown drive that is kept alive by fourth down. Like the late game fourth down Josh Allen run. Like you could have been giving them the ball back with a 5-point lead at that point. And he chose to go for it and got paid off. And then, you know, you think about last year's AFC title game where he was kind of the opposite way. And so what are you going to get? Here it is, the playoffs. You've got maybe weather. Well, definitely weather. You know, we'll see how much of a factor it's going to be. It turned out not a factor at all for the Bills. As far as, like, scoring points goes, you can't do better than they did. Well, I guess you could make two more extra points. Whatever. You get the point. So I don't know. I mean, we didn't get a window into that, into like playoff McDermott on fourth downs, because again, there were no fourth downs in the game for the Bills. I doubt that they have that kind of success in Kansas City. So, it's something to keep an eye on for sure.
All right. Thank you, Keith. Exciting, development here at work. In that I actually went out to the lobby and the song playing was not Reminiscing by the Little River Band. Very strange.
How did that happen?
I don't know. There must be another song in the rotation suddenly. I'm telling you, I've had this written down. I mentioned it once and then I hear that song and I immediately think of like how often I've heard it lately out in the lobby. You know, music with Muzak, no words, no singing, just some right. Pop song that's just, you know, lightened, mellowed. Not that most of those songs really need mellowing, but
right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you're gonna mellow out the Little River Band. Okay.
I know, right? But on Monday or Tuesday, I got here, and the song in the lobby is Reminiscing by the Little River Band. I'm like, there it is again. And this was Tuesday, and then I left, and it again was that song.
Oh, wow!
So you know. A song can be played twice out on whatever the loop is out there.
Right. I was going to say, like, what, do you always get there at the same time, right? Is it like a, you know, because, you know, if it's at 1 o'clock on Monday, it might be at 1 o'clock on Tuesday that you would walk in and hear. Not that you get there at the exact same time, but you can hear me working here.
Probably not. Probably not right. Exactly.
Right.
But how many songs are in that loop, I wonder? Is it 100? Is it 100 songs? Maybe I'll find out.
Who would know? You heard it 6 hours apart?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how long. I don't know how long the Muzak versions of these songs are. Like, do they go the whole way with a song,
much.
Even though there's no words, or do they trim stuff out because you don't need to have the instrumental break part if there's no words with it to begin with?
Oh, no, I think it's the real song.
Yeah.
Do, do, okay. Do, 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 do. That instrumental part. That was definitely there. I heard it.
Okay.
Do, 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 do. I definitely heard it.
No, of course. I mean, that's a key element of the song. Oh. I'm saying, like, if there's a part where there would be just like a guitar solo or a piano solo, do you really need that? Because the whole thing is guitar or piano solos because there's no one singing.
I don't know.
So maybe they're a little shorter. Anyway, I'm guessing 3 minutes a song.
Yep.
So
no ads.
I don't know. You're the math wizard. Extrapolate 20, from there.
15 to 20 songs an hour.
Okay.
I think
there's a ballpark of your answer.
I figured out once working at a retail store that I used to during the holidays that there was something like 25 songs that were just played on a loop.
That's it?
Like one time, like one day, I made a point to count. And I think I got that it was like 25.
I wonder how many the Olive Garden has.
I mean, that's like 2 hours of songs, isn't it?
Long enough. The Olive Garden, you always hear that certain kind of music.
I think the Olive Garden might just be like one of those YouTube 10-hour loops.
I'm thinking like it's five songs. One of them's Dean Martin. It's five songs. It's just, you know, you're there for an hour at the most. You're not going to hear overlap. 10 songs.
Whatever service we used to have at the pizza place, we would get Runaway by, is that Tommy James and the Shondells, I think?
Del Shannon?
Del Shannon is what that is. Yeah. Runaway. And it had, thank you for knowing that. I don't want to botch that. Yes, Del Shannon. And there's this keyboard break, like two-thirds of the way through the song.
Yes.
That no matter what kind of racket, I mean, phones ringing, delivery drivers, customers, you know, the pizza guys yelling to the wing person and just all kinds of ruckus. I could be standing in the middle of that, not paying attention to the Muzak and that or whatever it was, because it was actually the song by Del Shannon. That keyboard part would come on and just cut through everything and penetrate my brainstem in a way that just marred me for life. Like, they're all-time great. It's a great song. People love that song. I hate it because I could be, you know, ringing out a customer and not paying any attention and just hear, and it just, it hurt me. It hurt me pretty bad.
I'm writing that down in case I really need just, I'm really in a bad place with something you've said. I might have to whip out that song, whip out Runaway. John Clayton and Kurt Warner next hour. Then Sabres pregame. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Blitz. Lost the football. It's on the ground. Covered by the Raiders.
His college teammate, Charles Woodson, on the blitz.
After reviewing the play, the quarterback's arm was going forward. It is an incomplete pass.
Sure, right. That's the Tuck Rule 20th anniversary is here. Greg Gumbel, Phil Sims, maybe was that? On that one, CBS? I mean, just...
I saw Sal sort of tweak a Boston area show, and I'm not entirely sure what's all been going on there. But there was like a video of the two hosts talking about the anniversary of... What was it called? It was not the Tuck Rule game, which is what every other living, breathing human football fan refers to that game as the Tuck Rule game. It was like the Snow Bowl.
The Snow
or something.
Bowl. Yeah.
New England has its own name for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I never knew that.
Come on. I didn't either, and I don't want to necessarily assume the entire region goes with that, but the Snow Bowl. Oh, my gosh. Get over yourselves already.
Yeah, you know, guys, that rule did not really determine the outcome of that game, that play. Really, nobody talks about the defense in that game.
No, that game is way more well-known for the snow.
Yeah, that's the first thing that anybody remembers about it. That's why it's being celebrated on its anniversary.
Yeah, not because it's of the out. Atrocity of officiating that occurred that delivered a Super Bowl appearance for the Patriots.
There's a 30 for 30 on the Tuck Rule coming out, and the trailer got released yesterday, and like already, like I know I'm gonna love half of it. Like the Mark Davis part, maybe I'll love Charles Woodson, even the Brady part, because it's Woodson and Brady together. But like Brewski and Harrison, or not Harrison, why can't Rodney Harrison? Yes, like his comment in there and Kraft, like that is just gonna be like, yeah, that side of the story is just gonna drive me insane.
It might,
except for Brady, because Brady sounded in even that trailer like he was giving an inch a lot more than any of those other guys was, especially Brewski.
What is there to interpret? Like, what's subjective about it? It was a ridiculous call made on a technicality that, I mean, who needed it? Just, it was a ridiculous call. So what is anybody going to say? You know, like the immaculate reception, you go back and forth on whether it should have counted. You go back and forth on whether it should have. Is there an argument like that should have been an incomplete pass in like the real world? Did somebody, is that what the Patriot guys you're sort of bracing for are going to do? They're going to say like, oh, here's why it should be an income. Here's why it wasn't. I don't need any of those guys to tell me that. It's like, it's not really an interpretation. It is technically, but come on. What is there to even, how do you get there?
No, like, right. I think, how do you get there? You get there by saying, well, clearly they weren't championship caliber because they couldn't overcome.
What the Patriots play, what like they'll that. Do is like, no, we were actually good anyway.
Right.
You know, people don't give us credit for our eighth-ranked defense or something like that. Like, who cares? All kinds of playoff teams have lost that had good teams. They just lost. I don't know. I don't know if I'll watch it.
I'm going to watch it. Brady, I just want to see Brady kind of give an inch a little bit. Like, it's hard to tell from it, but he almost seems like he's giving off the vibes like, yeah, I got away with one there.
Sure. He
was that way. He's been that way about a lot of stuff recently.
Yes.
There was a video yesterday about, like, I do believe the refs. He didn't say that matter of factly. He was like, the refs probably let me get away with unsportsmanlike conduct a lot.
Sure. Why not be real? John Clayton coming up and Kurt Warner next hour here on WGR.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.